Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. On behalf of Torah Motion, welcome to part four, the final part of our series with Dr. Gewirtz on the changing nature of time in Halakha. And I think today we're going to continue our discussion of the international, really do most of the discussion on the international dateline, and then I think a little bit of odds and ends. So, bakasha, right. Dr. Gewirtz.
Thank you. First, I want to thank Mel Barinholtz, who was not on last time, but listened to the shiur online. And as he always does, he is incredibly precise and picked up all the little things that I misspoke.
So, I am here.
Oh, good. So now you could actually, if I do that again, you can butt in and correct me on the spot. But I'm going to correct some of the I said a couple of things imprecisely, and I will correct them as we go tonight. Okay, we started last time with what was called the circumnavigator's paradox. Two mythical, I can't say mythical. I said, two people, not real people, not really Aristotle and Plato, but people called Aristotle and Plato, who traveled, let's just say, from Provence, one going across the Atlantic, across North America, across the Pacific, across Asia, and the other going in the opposite direction. And they both return to Provence, and the person going west, every day that he goes, gets a little bit longer. And you add up all those little bits. When he comes back, he's missing a day. And he says, it's not Wednesday, it's only Tuesday. Of course, the fellow going the other way, like we would be going to Eretz Yisrael, across Asia, across the Pacific, across North America, his days are getting shorter. And the mathematics will tell you that as long as he's going slower than the speed of the sun, he is going to end up, when he gets back to where he started, thinking it is a day later. Of course, the people in Provence know that it's Wednesday, while they have one person saying Tuesday, and they have one person saying Thursday. And that was argued about. And as we noted, eventually Magellan took the trip going west. He never made it back. He died in the Philippines. But his boat, less than 10% of his original crew survived. They made it back to Europe. And lo and behold, they were able to substantiate that their careful count of days was one less than the people who had, of course, stayed in Europe. Okay, and the question was, what do you do about that? And what happened? The world established a dateline and an associated rule. Cross the dateline going from east to west. Next day, as soon as you touch the dateline, go over, it's the next day. Go the other direction, it's the previous day. And that, in a sense, solved all problems. And that was kind of the way things have been, with minor adjustments for various reasons. We'll talk about the one that turns out to be somewhat relevant. That's the way it's been for the last, 150, 200 years. Now, the question then becomes, well, that's nice. That's the international dateline. Is there a halachic dateline? If there's an international dateline, is there a halachic dateline? And we talked about various shitos. Let me clarify, if I didn't say this precisely correctly. The Chazon Ish, based on a Balamor, that the Gemara gives special significance to 12 noon. 12 noon is 18 hours after the start of the day, which for calendar and dateline purposes starts at 6 o'clock. So 12 o'clock the next day is 18 hours later. There are 24 hours in a day. By convention, if you go around, there are 360 degrees around the earth. So 1 hour, of which there are 24, into 360 is 15 degrees, which is roughly, and take the word roughly very roughly, the size of each of the time zones. If you go across the United States, you would expect every 15 degrees, give or take, you're going to change time zones. So the Chazon Ish, 18 hours, corresponds to 18 times 15, 270 degrees. I said that incorrectly last time. 18 times 15 is 270. You go 270 degrees from Yerushalayim towards Europe, North America, across the Pacific. You get to a point where at 12 o'clock, at 11:59, that place is still going to have a full 24-hour day. After 12 o'clock, nowhere on earth is there a full 24-hour day, for which the Chazon Ish gave prominence to that Gemara and said, basically, that's the point at which there is an international dateline. That point turned out to be in the middle of China, in the middle of Australia. So the Chazon Ish came up with a new theory that everything drags towards Eretz Yisrael. So if it's all of Australia drags towards Perth, which is on the Israel side as opposed to Sydney, China drags towards Eretz Yisrael. But once you step off of China, importantly into Japan or New Zealand or the Philippines, you know, I don't know about Taiwan. I don't want to get into whether that's close enough not to count, but in theory, even Taiwan would have a separate time zone, which I don't think will prevent the Chinese from doing anything. But anyway, that's the sheet of the Chazon Ish. I also mentioned last time Rav David Shapiro. Rav David Shapiro was a student of the Minchas Elazar, the Munkacher, who considered Satmar a pro-Zionist organization. He actually, unlike anyone else, he explicitly had a medrash. There is a medrash. I once saw it. I forgot where. I believe it's somewhere in the writings of Rav Mordechai Yaffe is where I saw it. Those who are expert in midrash maybe can find it in the midrash. I'd love to find it. I'd love to find it from in Arisha and Rachron. As far as I know, I saw it in one of the writings of Mordechai Yaffe, who known as Lavush, living in the 16th century. He actually quoted that lehalacha as to what's the ideal time for saying birchas, you know, birchas hashemesh, that we say once every 28 years. He said the best time to say it is 9 o'clock in the morning. And he based this on a Gemara that said that at 9 o'clock in the morning in Yerushalayim, that was the day at which HaKadosh Baruch Hu started the fourth day. So the fourth day started somewhere far from Yerushalayim. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu started that day, it was already 9 o'clock, which is 15 hours. 15 times 15, 225 degrees. As luck would have it, that fell less than 5 or 6 degrees from the international dateline. He then adjusted it based on he said we have to account for Ben Ashmashos. Don't have to get into that. He literally almost fell on the dateline. So he was the most inventive of dateline shitos. And, you know, there are many others. After Kuczynski, 100 Yerushalayim is on the top of the world. So, and we'll get to more of them today. But the real question that we have to address, is the dateline really a logical necessity? Or is it just an expedient solution to a baffling situation? In other words, we're baffled by the circumnavigators and people and what day is it. And the dateline is a way to solve the problem. But the real question is it logically necessary? Do I have to rely on a dateline in order to solve the problem? So what I'm going to basically argue, and it's not that hard, that the answer is no. The dateline is an interesting way of solving the problem, but it's not absolutely necessary. If we didn't have a dateline, the world would continue to exist. Mankind would continue to exist. People might get confused as to what time it is and where they are and what's going on, but a dateline is a convenient way of addressing what otherwise would be confusing. But it's not a logical necessity. A person's affinity, in other words, if I am a thoroughgoing New Yorker, I can decide that the day is the day that's in New York, the time is the time that's in New York, and if I can't add or change the date or add hours if I'm in another city, that's my problem. But I have the perfect right to pick a place to which I have a personal affinity, and you'll see that's really how the Dateline was built. Whenever they had to change things, when places moved from one jurisdiction to another, they would change the Dateline. It wasn't a straight line. It would move in, as it had to, in order to accommodate not personal affinity, but political affinity. If I'm Jewish, then I have another criteria. I use the Minhag HaMakom. I come to a place, and that place keeps a particular day as Tuesday, a particular day as Shabbos, then I have no significance relative to the Minhag HaMakom. I can't say, you know, according to where I come from, today is whatever. Just like I can't do mulacha if I'm a Ben Eretz Yisrael and I'm in Chutz Laaretz, I'm not allowed to at least publicly violate the mores of the community. So in a similar way, wherever I am, I have to follow the Minhag HaMakom. Dateline ahim, dateline aher, I don't care about datelines. I only care of something, you know, the halachic equivalent to personal or political affinity, the Minhag HaMakom. That's one way to do it. Now, you think about it a little bit. If you travel from, I'm going to have to Canadianize this, from Toronto to Vancouver, you know, it's not me going to Seattle. You're going to Vancouver. You have to change your watch. So I, you know, spent a good part of my, you know, working career, you know, flying to the West Coast once every 2 weeks. And I never changed my watch because I would have a sequence of meetings for a day or two in cities in the West Coast. Most of the day, I was on the phone with people in New York or people on the East Coast or people God knows where around the world. And I would mark what time in New York time do I have these meetings? And I would mark the few meetings that I had on the West Coast, everything in New York time. And best I tell, no policeman ever came over to my calendar and said, your calendar is somehow politically incorrect. You know, you can't keep calendars like that. It's usher. You must change your watch to the local time, and keeping your watch on the non-local time is some sort of a violation. I think most people would say, okay, that makes sense. Well, if that makes sense, why is it that when I go to Beijing, I'm somehow mechuyev to change to the day in Beijing? That is not fundamentally or logically different to going to a different time zone. The fact that they phase a different day is really no different. It's really no different than the person keeping a different time as I do. An hour or a day is not fundamentally different. And if you can somehow wrap your head around not changing your watch, you ought to similarly wrap your head around not changing the date based on what they're doing. Now, the circumnavigator's paradox is solved with a date. All right. Then everybody knows when they pass the state line, move your clock, move your day forward, move your day back. But what's really required is an explanation. We don't have to, you know, we don't have to have a dateline. We have to have a teretz for what was going on in the circumnavigator's paradox. And the teretz we described last time, describe it again. The days are longer. We end up with one less day. Go the other direction, the days are shorter. You end up with one more day. That's it. Now, if those people for the rest of their lives want to consider the day shorter, the day longer, it's probably not that good of an idea. It's probably a good idea that they both adjust to the time at the place that they are, and without the need for a deadline. Now, there are things you have to think about. Let's say that Aristotle and Plato converted. Okay, there are two Yidden now. They're not, I don't know, we'll call them, Ari and Pinchas. Actually, Pinchas is an Egyptian name, so maybe we'll find a better name. But Ari and whomever, Paltiel, and they're traveling, and they both meet up on an island. What's going to happen? Well, same thing. Halfway around the world, they're going to meet up, and one person is going to want to make Havdalah, the guy coming from through Asia to the Pacific, and coming the other way, Paltiel or Plato, he's going to want to start Shabbos. So you're going to have two people sitting on an island together arguing as to what day of the week it is. All right. So they'll argue. Jews like to argue. So they don't, what day of the week it is, according to him, according to his cheshbon, Shabbos was a day ago. That's the guy coming from through Asia. And according to the person coming across America into the Pacific, it's a day earlier. I'm going to start my Shabbos now. Now, that's not a problem. There are a lot of times when two people disagree. If two people are wandering in the desert, right, and they lost track of time, what do they do when they meet? The answer is nothing. They haven't reached a settlement. They've reached a common point. And the halacha doesn't say, maybe there's a halacha that the Adam Gadol has to be listened to. But by and large, if they were both the same people, the halacha would say, all right, you've got to count. You've got to count. Baruch Hashem for you. Baruch Hashem for you. Everything is fine. What's the problem? Now, if I'll give you a more real example. You have two Chabad shlichim. There is a Chabad shliach, as far as I know, somewhere in the western part of Alaska. And there are certainly Chabad shluchim in the eastern part of the former Soviet Union. And embed them, give them, imbue them with the eyesight of Sarah Palin, and they can see each other across the Bering Straits, and one of them is going to start about to make Kiddush, and he looks across the Bering Straits, and he sees his friend about to make Havdalah. So, okay, if they like, they can imagine that there is a dateline. The dateline people will say, all right, there's a dateline in between the middle of the Bering Straits. By the way, there was a shita of a person who was a Rosh Yeshiva in the same place as Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rabbi Yonah Mertzbach, who wrote many, many interesting, creative, to the hilt, articles related to Zmanim. They're well worth reading. I don't believe that he is the Poseh Hakron on these things, but his creativity is certainly much to be appreciated. He came up with a dateline in the Bering Straits. So, all right, so these Chabad Hasidim, but the Chabad Hasidim are not really doing that. What they are really doing is the Chassid in Alaska, he knows where his bed is buttered. It's in Washington. So he's going to keep time like those of us in North America. And Chabad Shaliach in Eastern Russia, he's going to keep time, like his friend Rabbi Lazar and his friend, Mr. Putin. So he's going to keep time differently. The fact that they are holding different times, they're not next to each other. They're in different places. The fact that they are keeping Shabbos on a different day, loymaya vloymaya. Now, how does this come about? This is kind of theoretically, this sounds reasonable. But let's say, just for argument's sake, and I think this is the right way to think about it, certainly from a halachic perspective. The world starts in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is the center of the world, the center of the Jewish world. People go out from Yerushalayim and they travel. They travel in one direction, towards Jordan, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, India, China, however far they go. What do? As they go, whenever the sun sets on what they think of as Friday, they start Shabbos. People going in the other direction, they also, when the sun sets, they start Shabbos. Late. They're earlier than Eretz Yisrael, and they're later than Eretz Yisrael. Well, guess what? As far as I know, there is no reference anywhere in Jewish literature of two groups arriving in the same place and arguing, one coming from the east, one coming from the west, and arguing what day it is. The whole world, by some miracle, were populated. Now, of course, there are people, places with no Jew has ever, stepped foot. I'm wondering about that. It may not be true anymore. But let's assume that there's, Nebuch, some poor island in the Pacific where no one has actually set foot. But the point is, wherever there is a Jewish community, we have no record anywhere in the halachic literature that there was ever a machlokas. So every place was settled by a simple rule. I'm going this way from Yerushalayim, and I'm establishing a settlement. You're going the other way from Yerushalayim, and you're establishing a settlement. You do what you want, I'll do what I want. In the odd chance that two of us arrive with whole communities in an unmarked place, a place that is no community has ever been established there before. Something that never happens. Two communities coming in opposite directions arrive in the same place. So one community says, I'm going to make Shabbos, and the other community wants to make Abdullah. So good. So you call in your local posse, or in the modern day, you get them on Skype or, Zoom or however you communicate with your local posse. There's going to be internet access with satellites soon all over the world. And you ask your Shiloh. And by the way, there are Kloli Hapsa that will tell you what to do. The larger group, the more distinguished group, the one with more scholars. In other words, how a posek will decide that question. I doubt the posek would say, let's have two communities, just like we have Sfarad and Ashkenaz. We'll have Shabbos on Sunday and on Saturday, or on Friday, or whatever the case may be. Chances are they're going to find the psak. But we don't know of any such tshuva. Never happened. And the world got populated. There are Jews everywhere that's relevant. So there's no problem. And that question never, ever came up. Now, be careful. I didn't say that there are no problems. I said that question of what the minhag hamakom, the day of the week in that place, is, never came up. That's very, very, very different from a related question about what about me? I go from, let's say, for argument's sake, based on this, place X is, place X is going to start Shabbos soon. And I'm coming from the other direction, and I think Shabbos is over already. I already had Shabbos. And I come there, and it's like, we're mamish in the middle of Shabbos. And I'm traveling. What am I supposed to do? So that's a more difficult shaila of somebody who moves from place to place, from a makom where he was, where based on that he was able to keep Shabbos, based on, let's just say, Eretz Yisrael or India, and he then comes to some place in the Pacific where the people, for whatever reason, are keeping American time. So he thinks Shabbos is over. They're in the middle of Shabbos. He arrives in the middle of the day. And there's a nice shaila as to what he's supposed to do. That is a wholly different shaila. And if we wanted to review the literature on those types of issues, we would need much more than a four-part lecture. There are, there are thousands of pages of tshuvos written about things like that with respect to Hilchos Nida, with respect to the day of a bris, with respect to almost everything. And that's really not my focus. I will tell you that surprisingly, one of the people who was extremely machmir on that situation will surprise most of you was the Rav. So the Rav said, if you go from a place where you think, Shabbos is going to be on Sunday, and you arrive there and they want to keep Shabbos on, their Shabbos, you have to keep Shabbos on your day and on their day. And he didn't say which one is the Araisa, which one's the Rabbanon. He told a particular person to keep Shabbos for two continuous days. The person happened to have been a chaplain who was flying from Guam to Hawaii on almost a constant basis to, tender to the Jewish communities of soldiers in those two places. And he explained to the Rav that, it's hard enough to explain Shabbos one day a week. But if I suddenly now I'm going to try to tell people that it's Shabbos 2 days a week, I'm going to get into trouble. By the way, the Rav said after the first week, you only have to keep the minhag a month. The Rav, as I heard, this could be urban legend completely, but I heard this from a relatively reliable source, to be unnamed. The Rav relented. He said, just keep the minhag a month. Now, that's the Rav. The Lubavitcher Rebbe never relented. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, without any Lubavitcher Hasidim on the call, may know this. If you are an Australian and you travel from Australia to New York to spend Shavuos with the Rebbe, so what's going to happen? You're going to see an extra sunset. So the day before Shavuos is your Shavuos. The Rebbe would tell you, you have to keep 3 days Shavuos. Your day, the day in New York, and the day Yom Tov Sheni. So you would have to keep your first day, go the other way. If a Lubavitcher Chassid went from New York to Australia, he would miss a sunset. And the Rebbe would tell him that he has to keep the day in Australia. Yom Tov Sheni in Australia is Yom Rishon for him. And the day after Shavuos is his Yom Tov Sheni. And this is not a question of, of urban legend. This is the tshuva which I read. You can find it. Everything the last Rebbe said is recorded. So this is recorded multiple times. So the Rebbe actually... Okay, so but this is not what we're talking about. Let's not worry about travelers. Travelers, especially if we start getting into issues of Nida and a bris, remember the baby, three babies are born. One travels around the world one day in a jet, but one travels the other way. They do the circumnavigator's paradox in one day. Are there brisim the next week on the same day? Or do you count the number of sunsets each baby thought? Interesting, Shilas. And there is on all of these things, and these things are often confused with the Shilas of how we paskin. In other words, people will start cheshbening if this is Rav Potensky or the Chazon Ish, and they start making all sorts of calculations as to what to do. But the Shilas effectively is independent of how you establish the day in the place. If you simply all come back to New York and travel in one and two directions on a jet, you have the Shilas. Regardless, where the dateline is somewhere. And there are communities that you pass that had a different day. So those Shilas we're just not going to worry about. What is similar to that, which is a problem, which I believe in recent last 10 years did not come up, they changed the date. So I believe, I don't know the names of the precise Western or Eastern or something Samoa, decided that it has more shaychus with one place versus the other. So in the middle of everything, they decided to change the date. As far as I know, there was not a Jewish community there now. There wasn't one there before. Somebody traveling there on business for the first time should ask his local rabbi what to do. My unordained view is keep whatever day of the week you think it was where you came from. Until you get to a new makom where there are Jews, stay with what you were doing. That creates all sorts of problems if you fly from Japan to the United States on Thursday night or Friday afternoon. You'll arrive before Shabbos in New York, but it may have been Shabbos for a while you were on the plane, which, again, Shilas to ask rabbis at a different time. The real place that's a problem for us is the Seward Purchase, Alaska. Alaska used to be owned by the Russians, and we bought that wonderful state. That's, by the way, how we got Sarah Palin. She came as part of the deal. But anyway, we bought the state in, I think, 1867, or if somebody knows better, you can please correct that. And the place had two problems. One related to something we talked about with respect to Rosh Chodesh. They were following the Kufot de Shmuel. They were following the Julian calendar. We, of course, went on to the Gregorian calendar. So the date, the actual date, was off by 11 days or something, 10 days. So they had to correct that. The other thing, they kept the same day as Russia. So when they thought it was Friday, when it became the United States, it became Shabbos. The question is that we really don't know the answer to. Was there a Jewish community there? And if there was a Jewish community, subsequently, as far as anyone knows, disappeared. I have not researched this, nor will I. But anyone really interested in looking at the history of Jewish communities in Alaska, as far as I know, Jews, Orthodox Jews, came back to Alaska in the early part of the 20th century. I don't know if any of you who have been to Anchorage, one of the most famous stores in Anchorage for a Jew is David Green's Furrier. His great-grandfather went to Alaska from Jew with a beard, and he set up shop as a furrier. And now he is, as far as I know, one of the largest furriers in the world. His great-grandson now runs the store. He's married to a young lady of my daughter's age from New Jersey, which all of them know. They all grew up together. And, you know, if you tell them that you know his father-in-law from New Jersey, you, like I, may get a discount. Anyway, so there's a Jewish community there, and they keep the American minhag. And the question is, they assume that whatever minhag may have been there, Bimei Russia, in the old Russian days, has since disappeared. And as a result, they keep the American minhag, and there are no shilas. The only shilas they have there are with respect to another interesting problem. You're so far north, when is Shabbos over? Which is, another shir for a different day. I had a large argument with the shliach there, and eventually I convinced him to ask some Lubavitcher poskim who happened to agree, and he changed the minhag ha-makom. He became a little more liberal. But not a lot. Anyway, it's a problem up there. Now, the advantage of this approach, there are many, many advantages that this approach has after, as opposed to having an absolute dateline. If you have an absolute dateline, wherever you put it, you can put it on the shore, on the shoreline. You can put it in the middle of China. You can put it in the middle of Alaska. You can put it in the Bering Straits. If somebody walks from one side to the other, can you walk in and out of Shabbos? As soon as you say there's an absolute line somewhere, however you define it, it's somewhere. So if you're standing on one side of it, you're celebrating Shabbos, you walk to the other side, it's Sunday. You walk back, it's Shabbos. So, you know, if, you know, Super Bowl is on, you walk out of Shabbos, you watch the Super Bowl, and, oh, now I'm back, Shabbos again. You want, you know, I there are poskim, real live poskim, who believed it was possible to walk in and out of Shabbos. But to me, I can't explain it. I don't understand it. I think it is almost invalidates the existence of so precise a line. The idea of minhag ha-makom and a group of people, you're not, we don't have communities like, you know, like I'm now in a suburb of Boca. We don't keep Shabbos in Boynton differently than the community in Boca. And I know of no place that's not widely separated where you're not going to, you know, other than being Milchal Shabbos and using some mode of non-halachic transportation. I have to be careful these days. These days we now have halachic transportation. So using non-halachic transportation, you can't get from one place to the other. So Baruch Hashem, this idea of walking in and out of Shabbos is, you know, not practical anymore. And we don't know of it anywhere. And that's really another, I think, intrinsic advantage of believing that the dateline is whatever the minhag ha-makom established, wherever you, as you went from Yerushalayim. The other interesting problem with the physical dateline is Antarctica. Antarctica is a large continent, not widely populated. There are not a lot of people, but there are a lot of groups from different countries that populate different sections of Antarctica. And I assure you, all of those groups, they're not adjacent to each other, but they all keep the day of their parent company. So the American explorers, wherever the heck they are, they think it's whatever day it is in America. The Australian, they keep Australian. How they adjust their watches, I don't know. However, if you believe there's a solid line, no matter where you put it, it has to traverse the Antarctica. So what are you going to do? Now, you could theoretically have the line move all around and make a circle around Antarctica from one side to the other, but that would be very, very weird. Antarctica is a bit of a problem. That would require a very creative solution. And if you did that, then if there ever was an Orthodox explorer from a country, he would have to hope that however you constructed your dateline, you put him on the right side, which is kind of not guaranteed. You're likely, if I have no doubt, in maybe not my lifetime, but by the time my grandchildren's lifetime, there will be cruises to the Antarctica. There will be Jews. There already was one cruise that went to the outskirts of Antarctica. There will be Jews in Antarctica, and they're going to have a big Shiloh. And, you know, this, I believe what they do is what they used to do. But that's a very hard thing. The other thing that would be very difficult is if islands in the Pacific say that we maintained ownership of the Philippines and China maintained ownership of Hawaii. I don't know if they ever did, but let's assume they did. Well, now what would you do? Philippines would want American time. Hawaii would want Chinese time. And things would look absolutely weird. You know, you would have to build a really strange shaped line to accommodate that. That's a real. Now, the other problem is we, Baruch Hashem, have a large ocean called the Pacific Ocean, and we have an almost equally large ocean called the Atlantic Ocean. Now, were it not for the fact that North America has affinity to Europe. We could have put the date line in the middle of Atlantic, sort of, and we could have a different date here than England and Paris, but we didn't do that. But you can use your imagination and start to imagine different topologies for the continents, you know, going sideways around the world, you know, being attached by a narrow bridge, you know, being a land bridge between us and Europe or us and Asia. And, you know, this could create all sorts of complexities for those trying to create a specific line. None of this would create complexities for those who follow Minhag HaMakom. Now, the one thing that I will tell you that there is a very nice drush of the Vilna Gaon that this throws into a bit of a quandary. For those of you who are aware, the Vilna Gaon on Mekadesh HaShabbos, the Yisrael Vazmanim, says that God is Mekadesh Shabbos, and he was Mekadesh Knesset Yisrael, but the Zamanim, this again is, remember the first talk, we talked about the Rav Shita, about whatever day we declare, that's the day of Yontif. That's exactly what the Vilna Gaon said. Mekadesh HaShabbos, the Shabbos is set by God. God sets the Jewish people as the Am HaNivchar, and the Am HaNivchar decides when the various regalim are to be celebrated. All right, that's the problem is God set Shabbos. I just said, no, God doesn't set Shabbos. Shabbos is set by the first guy who got there with the community. That doesn't sound exactly like the drush of the Vilna Gaon. So what you have to say, and it's a little bit of a, I don't know what you call this, a dre or a, you know, krum, you know, eretz, God sanctifies any day that we call Shabbos. In other words, we actually establish Shabbos the day of the week, but who embeds that day of the week with Kedusha? Embedding the day that we consider Shabbos with Kedusha is something that's done by a Kodesh Baruch. All right, that's just, you know, that's the only problem that I ever encountered with the idea that there physically is no dateline. Now, again, you know, this has not been expressed exactly this way by anyone. However, if you go back I'll remember it, the Radvaz, late Rishon, early Achron. You go back to Reb Shaul Natanson, the Shaul Meshiv. You go to Reb Yisrael Zalman Meltzer. You go to the Vina Rav. You go to Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. These are not minor figures. These are major figures, as well as others who, practically speaking, you know, end up with this psak, including Rav Shapiro, Rav Kasher. There are many others who actually believed in datelines, but effectively came to this conclusion practically. You have a really relatively significant, I would have to say, certainly not a majority opinion, but a very substantial das yachid that allows you to rely on any place. If you add to that all the urban legends about what different Oskim or different Gedolei Yisrael believed, you may actually get up to a majority. Because I believe both the Rav and the Lubavitcher Rebbe believe that the Minhag HaMakom sets the day. In other words, it's the day of the week based on what people do there. And I suspect that there were other posting who also held that point of view. What is certainly not the case is the argument that you will see in too many places that having a dateline is a logical necessity, because it simply isn't. It is no different than changing your watch for a different time. And if you have a watch now that has a day on it, Okay, you don't have to change the day. You don't have to change the time. You just have to keep a careful calculation in your head. Now, a number of you may be wondering what these three lectures have to do with each other. You know, the Jewish calendar, Satmar censorship, and Dateline. And the truth is, I think that they do. And I want to sort of say some, I guess the recorder is on, I don't really care. I've said this in public many times before. I've argued this and I actually believe this to be true. We live in a modern world, and most of you on this call, I don't see any real Haredi faces. You're all having, I see one possible white shirt, but I think even Rabbi Kelman's shirt is blue. I actually got up in a shul on an occasion not too long ago to speak, and there were about 50 men in the audience. I didn't see the Ezrat Nashim, but the 50 men in the audience were all wearing white shirts, and I was wearing a blue shirt. So I told them that I'm very happy that this is not before Pesach, because before Pesach, if you walk into the Beis Medrash in Lakewood, everyone's going to jump up to sell you their chametz. So, you know, you can't be wearing, and I'm actually wearing something worse than a white shirt. But nonetheless, modernity has a way of intruding wherever you want. In other words, people think that they are able to do whatever they can to keep modernity at bay. But in a mischievous way, modernity has a way of intruding on the lives of everybody. And the people that aren't aware that the world is changing, and as a result, the halacha has to be reapplied, and do not admit to modernity, and do not admit that modernity creates new ways of doing things, expressing oneself, thinking about the world, examining the world, making determinations about the world, are less likely than most to actually take cognizance of them. And they, more often than not, will say things that are very anachronistic. And I mean this very seriously. When people read Gemara, read Rishonim, I can show you examples of 20th and 19th century poskim who thought in terms of modern concepts, which they superimposed on the way they read a text from 1,000 or 1,500 years ago. Now, when it came to the Dateline, one of the things that happened, it didn't happen before, it happened in the last 100 years. One of the things we are completely, completely hepped up on, addicted to, is precision. Now, I'm not going to give an hour's shiur on precision. I did 2 weeks ago. If you go through the Talmudic literature, Gaonim and Rishonim, who did not have clocks, they were not, you know, as we are. Oh my God, I have to tell you when Netzach Hama is to a part of a second. You know, they did not observe Netzach Hama with an atomic clock in the front of the shul. They observed Netzach Hama very nicely. They davened when they did, and they did not go crazy about exactly what time it is. The size, you know, they did not come back with charts and utensils to tell you how much maror you have to eat or the size of matzah that you have to eat. This was all, you know, in fact, the Gaonim said the reason that shiurim are given this way, because you don't need a rabbi. You look at an olive, you look at an egg, and you decide whether what you're eating is the size of an olive or an egg. And that's the end of the story. In a very similar way, ancient texts, the precision that Chazal were careful with is nothing compared to the way we think. So as a result, if you go through the literature, particularly the 20th century, you have all sorts of people, no, not going to say more about the topic, who are hepped up on, oh my God, there are errors in our calendar. My point in that is, so what? As I quoted from the Rav, and I'll quote over and over and again, Yisroel is Mekadesh L'Chodesh. We are Mekadesh L'Chodesh by our observance of Yomim Tovim. We don't have to be precise. There are examples throughout Shas. And again, another hour's worth. There are literally an hour's worth of examples throughout Shas where Tanoim and Amoraim declared a day Rosh Chodesh or a day Pesach or a day Yom Kippur incorrectly. And they insisted that they be found because they said, we did it. It may be wrong. They didn't say it quite that way, but so be it. The power of Beis Din to declare something as Rosh Chodesh is absolute. Correctness, we'll worry about that a different day. In the modern day, people somehow get very disturbed by such sugyos and come up with what we call in the yeshiva Beich Terutzim to try to explain what may have been going on. So my first, you know, desire was Chazal had two very important principles that they were trying to follow. They did to a very, very accurate level. And the fact that it may not be perfect, then I get to my favorite community, Sapa. They are people who hang out, you know, as far from modernity as anyone. Though, again, I, you know, there are things about that community and other Haredi communities that baffle me. I know for a fact, and I won't tell you who made the call, that some of Reb Chaim Kanievsky's descendants use WhatsApp. And you don't use WhatsApp except unless you're using a smartphone. So I think somehow modernity is finding its way into a lot of places, and soon we'll have a kosher WhatsApp and we'll have a whatever. The Sattler and many other people did not realize that the way the rabbis of the Talmud and Rishonim and early Achronim spoke was counting back from the end of Shabbos. We today, modern people, all count forward from sunset. So when they saw 24, 35 minutes, it never occurred to them that that was anything but Shabbos is over 24 minutes or 37 minutes after sunset or the beginning of Shabbos. And that turns out to have been a fundamental error. Now, I will tell you, those of you who study Sugyo and read Rishonim, buyer beware, be careful, because there are many printed versions of Shas with the explanations and translations that do not do a much better job than Satmar, but it's more subtle. They're explaining a Gemara. All right. So you follow their explanation of the Gemara, and I can assure you, I have no idea what the Gemara was trying to say, because modern people have a tendency not to think of how many minutes before do you light candles before Shabbos is over. Have any of you ever heard someone say something like that? I certainly haven't. Everybody conforms with number of minutes after sunset. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a different way of talking. We're allowed to have a different way of talking. We don't talk Aramaic, not many of us. And we don't talk a lot of things the way Chazal talk. So, but realize that when you, again, learn ancient texts, modernity has nothing to do with how they happen to have spoken. Finally, the last thing we talked about was the dateline. And this is probably the most controversial. The Shaila came up for the first time in the 19th century. As I told you, people were going to Eastern Russia, and the dateline had just been established. So there was a dateline. And people, if you read anything from back then, what I told you was not believed. People believe if there wasn't a dateline, you know, the abyss is about to engulf the earth and we're all going to disappear. It's sof kolodoros. If you don't have a dateline, life does not continue. My own personal opinion, and this is obviously controversial, is this impacted the way Poskim thought as well. They said, well, if there's a dateline, there has to be a Jewish dateline. If the Goyim established a dateline, the Halacha must have established a dateline. All we need to do is figure out where it is. Now, there are people who said, yeah, there is a way to do it. What I described to you earlier, walk this way from Yerushalayim and walk the other way from Yerushalayim. And whoever gets there first gets to say what day of the week it is. End of story. There was never a Shaila ever raised and ever written. So we're done. We know where what day it is everywhere in the world. We never heard of the dateline, and we don't need to hear of it. But this, to many, many people, you know, there are how many ever you on the phone, ask someone who's not on the phone if they think the existence of a dateline is a logical necessity. And I will bet that most people will say, without a dateline, you'd never be able to escape the problems that you encounter that a dateline solves. And so the common denominator between all of this is modernity has impacts, and they're much worse if you don't understand that. And the people that deny the reality of modernity are the people who tend to get trapped most dramatically in the, you know, changes that occur so subtly that people don't even realize a change has happened. With that, thank you all very, very much for coming to listen. And we'll, you know, hand it back to Rabbi Kelman to tell you about what's coming up next.
Thank you very much. So I must say, you have a very different spin on modernity than we heard last night in Mark Shapiro's talk on the rise of reform. That was a very different approach to modernity.
It's just cute. I have to listen online tomorrow. I think I know it'll be on YouTube and on your site right. Tomorrow. I gave a shiur on this in a very different context with many, many proofs of this. Different than these, but you know, it's a difficult topic.
By the way, you didn't address at all the problem. The Shaila did come up in Shanghai. That's in the
world. Yeah, it came up in Hobi. Shanghai, they were fighting. The Chazon Ish said he moved the line all the way to the end of China, and he said they can keep Shabbos even though Shanghai is on the other side. They can keep Shabbos like the Minhag HaMakom, but he told the Jews that were stuck in Kobe, which is a significant number. Remember, you know, it was whatever. I'm sorry, I forget the guy's name. Sugihara. He was Japanese, so he was able to get some people to Kobe, and they couldn't make it back to China. They ended up in the United States, which is an Nakba. So the people in Kobe were the ones that they got a telegram from the Chazon Ish that eat on the 4th and fast on the 5th. Yom Kippur that year in Kobe was celebrated on Wednesday, and the Chazon Ish's telegram. Now, there is so much. I once mentioned to Mark that we really need a Mark Shapiro-like study of all the writings of that time, because I read enough to know most of what's said is not true. In other words, he went to him and he told him this, and the Brisker Rav agreed with the Chazon Ish. The Brisker Rav would not give a psak. because he would not paskin. He knew that his father wouldn't paskin. His father would ask Rav Meltzer, you know, and he didn't have him. I mean, not Rav Meltzer. What do you call the Brisker Posek? I remember whatever it is. And he tried to reach
Rieger.
Him. Rieger. No, Rieger, right.
Simcha Rieger.
Simcha Zelig Rieger. And he couldn't reach him because he was already Nebuch in the clutches of the Nazis. And since he couldn't get a psak for him, Simcha, he would have taken a psak for him, Simcha Zelig, over the Chazon Ish and over the Zalman and the whole rest of the world. And he would have told them, Azoy Zok Rav Isher Zalman, my father listened to Rav Isher Zalman, I mean, to Rav Rieger, and I'm going to listen to Rav Rieger. But, you know, people say he agreed with Chazon Ish, which is not true. The other story, Rav Savitsky, whose son is now one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah V'Das, he claims the Chazon Ish told him privately a few weeks before he died that he regrets the psak. Nobody believes that. But who knows? You know, this is like, there are a lot of legends that are floating around this topic.
But as far as I know, you're the only person in the world who believes there is no halachic international date. I mean, the little I know about the subject.
Well, you know, I think
that there's like Rabbi Schechter's question here on the, you know, the chat box, like, okay, you're traveling. So what do you do? Like when do you cross the international date line?
Okay. So there's two independent shilas. One shila is where is the date line, right? And the other shila is what do you do? Now, when you cross the date line, do you daven again? So I claim that you keep whatever observance you were doing based on the observance of natural events. When you come to another city, you adapt that city's minhag. And I think a number of rabbis, significant rabbis who I've spoken to, after a lot of, you know, examples, come to that conclusion. The idea of the person, the hardest problem is the person flying in and out of Shabbos, going from Tokyo to New York. There are people that don't get on a plane. You know, there are
Saturday
people,
night. They won't get on a plane Saturday night.
Thursday night.
Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In Tokyo. They also won't get on Thursday night.
Because in New York.
Tokyo. No, if you leave Tokyo Thursday night, I mean, Thursday during the day, you're going to.
It's going to get. No. It's if you leave the States, I would assume. If you leave Tokyo to New York,
If you leave New York to Tokyo, it never gets dark. You're flying.
I
will tell you just for, this is true. I was once in Tokyo on Tainus Esther. So I told them that, you know, there were Hasidim who got on my flight on Tainus Esther back from, they had, can't come to Narita from China. And they were flying to New York with me on my flight from Tainus Esther. So I tried to convince them that they have to fast when it turns night on the plane. They have to be up and be careful not to eat during those 2 hours. I was just having fun, but you know, it's a real, real problem. If you fly from Japan, you do fly through Shabbos. And there are a large number of poskim who permit it. And obviously there are a large number of poskim we do not permit. I never had this list. I fly Thursday night. It's already night in Tokyo and I'm fine. The next thing I see is the next day. But there are people, and I am a very close friend, very from, almost he has Haredi children, and he, you know, he's in business and he flies from Tokyo and he arrives, you know, Friday before Shabbos. But he has a problem. These shilas come up. I had shilas from a person.
It's a problem because in Tokyo it's Shabbos. Correct. He leaves and he hasn't arrived in New York yet. So if he's still in Tokyo time, he sort of should have observed Shabbos, but he's now in New York time.
Correct. So it's like, you know, these shilas.
I don't know why would that be a problem. He never.
But, you know, if he leaves, Tokyo. If he leaves, Let's say he leaves 12 o'clock.
Thursday night, Friday morning.
Like, no. Friday night. 12 o'clock Friday during the day.
12 o'clock he in the afternoon in the, during the day.
He right. arrives in New York 9 o'clock.
In the morning. Yeah, I understand but that. It goes backwards.
In between, it right. got dark. And the question is, when it got dark, I think, personally, I wouldn't do it. Because I think
so it gets dark. You leave 12. I don't know. You leave Tokyo 12 o'clock in the afternoon Friday. Why will it get dark?
You'll get dark because you're flying in the direction of darkness. It's darker earlier as you're going. So you're going to go.
How do you fly from Tokyo to New York? Fly east or west? I'm totally confused.
You're like flying like you go to Eretz Yisrael. So you have an extra day.
Oh, you're flying. You're flying.
Like you got Eretz. The other problem you have, which really complicates this, is in the summer, it's light all the way up. So if you fly north fast enough, you don't have a problem. So if you check the expected flight path, like for example, if you're flying now Newark to Shanghai or Newark to Beijing, there are many things where I've told people they don't have a problem in the summer. But don't do it in the winter, because in the winter, you know, it really, it's a very complicated child. I've gotten, you know, people sailing from people in the South Pacific with respect to Shabbos. And I told them, if you're a frum Jew, you shouldn't be sailing in the South Pacific. She said, no, they would just drop anchor and they hold Shabbos. They got an, you know,
I mean, this, yeah. This is a variation of the question you didn't discuss, of course, when you're north of the Arctic Circle, when they keep Shabbos. That's a separate issue.
That is a, I plead complete ignorance.
I know the, yeah, there, I think the Parak Yisrael, the end of the first Parak in Bracha, there's a whole discussion about that. Yeah, and if I remember correctly, Rav Schechter told us that Rav Chaim of Volozhin said you shouldn't travel north of the Arctic Circle, but that's a prima modernity.
I will tell you.
I mean, I've never been north of the Arctic Circle.
One of my greatest discussions was with Rav Schechter about this topic. And we reached a conclusion, not quite at the Arctic Circle, but my general view is that once Chatzos HaLaila occurs, it's the next day. And once Chatzos HaLaila divides one day from the next, at that point, Shabbos is over. And Chatzos HaLaila, despite the fact that it never gets dark, there is a point where there is a Chatzos HaLaila. I don't know how far north, but pretty far north. So if you go north of the Arctic Circle and you can still mathematically or astronomically, you know, observe when Chatzos HaLaila is, then you can use that as the beginning and end of Shabbos. You know, God forbid, there are communities like in Amsterdam, there are gezerot that you're not allowed to start Shabbos after 8 o'clock, even though there is no halachic basis for that.
Well, that was the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, if I'm not mistaken, said that if you don't have to pass on Shabbos, every time was past 9:30 at night. Now,
I don't know where that came from.
Rav Schechter told us where it came from. It came from the fact that since Shabbos Arba Tamuz is quote unquote only a minhag, it's not really a real halacha, it's a minhag. And when the minhag was accepted, no Jews lived anywhere north.
Or okay. That's a good svara. So I like that svara.
That already, I think, was said before Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. I think it's Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank that said that if you fly from Israel on an airplane on Shabbos Arba Tamuz, you leave Israel to go to America. So you leave 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You got a really long fast day.
Correct.
So you don't have to worry. No. You can end the fast when the fast ends.
That's not the same
as Shabbos and when the day is. It's a different form
of calculation. It's a very different problem.
I wish I would have known that when I did spend after my year in yeshiva, I spent Shabbos Arba Tamuz in Amsterdam, and I wish I would have known that tshuva, because I ended up fasting till 11:30 at night, and I just was unaware that I could have ended my fast at 9:30. So
I also spent Tisha B'Av in Paris, and I regretted that significantly.
I don't think they say these at Terim on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av obviously is more serious.
Right, exactly.
But Shivasa Vatamas, you know, okay.
Shivasa Vatamas, I agree. You know, you can get in trouble going the other way. I once tried to be smart and fly the other way.
Yeah, I've done that on Shivasa Vatamas. Our Torah motions often.
You know what happens?
Had a number of them right after Shivasa Vatamas.
And I stormed. And the plane flew to circumnavigated. It went into the middle of Greenland. So it was late. It was light longer on that fast day.
I don't think you'd have to fast any later than where you
went. And I hear you.
They went going backwards. Or then in other words, you leave Toronto. I've had that actually a couple of times. I left Toronto, let's say 5 o'clock in the evening on Shivasa Vatamas. And, so you look outside, you know, you save an hour off the fast, let's say, because, you know, you're flying
right,
east. If not, if they go some crazy route, the fast ends at 9:30 in Toronto. Shivasa Vatamas ends a little bit later than 9:30 in Toronto, 9:45, right. Depending on when, whatever, 9:45. So you can end the fast at 9:45. I don't think anybody would say you'd have to fast. Even if it's pure light, you wouldn't have to fast beyond that.
I really don't know. There's not a, you know.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I was in Berlin. Berlin is very far north.
Yes.
Very far east. And Tisha B'Av ends there about 10:30 at night. I've never heard of this 9:30.
No, that's not on Tisha B'Av, they say. The only Shivasa Vatamas. Tisha B'Av, they say you have to be strict. But right, Shivasa. I don't know if anybody follows this in practice. I really don't know. I just know Rav Shechter.
And also, it's different if you start and end in the same place. Because regardless of what you think, you know, if you start and end in the same place, I think you would probably not find as many Heterim.
Right.
Because that place probably established how it does things.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've never studied this. This is for Poskim.
I know. I left Berlin. My kids live in Berlin. I left Berlin. I didn't want to stay there, Tisha B'Av, because it ends at 10:45.
I will say the year we had I went on our Torah Motion trip to Africa. So we went right after Tisha B'Av, and then, like 2 weeks before Tisha B'Av, they invited me to speak, but I arranged a program here, whatever. We had booked our tickets, but you, Shivasa Vatamas, you want to be in South Africa. The fast ends at 5:30. That's where you want to be. Shivasa Vatamas, but okay, Nunu. Anyways, all right.
Singapore is also very good.
Okay.
In fact, Singapore is even better.
Yeah. But okay, I wasn't Zocha, whatever, or not Zocha. I don't know what the word is. Okay.
So is Brazil.
Haven't been there. Haven't gone that.
Yes.
I've
been to Caracas with this thing. That's actually where I first got really interested in Zamanim. I think it's 8 degrees from the equator. So
that's what I'm going to
say.
Probably
a half degree. Well,
that's why Yerushalayim is so good. Yerushalayim is never late.
Yeah. And by the way, here in Boynton, we're south of Yerushalayim, so we also have very short Shabbosim and fasts. Puerto Rico is that way.
Anyways, talking about time, it's getting late, and we'll let you go for that.
I'm sorry.
The changing time is relative. I know, of course, but and we look forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. Rabbi Kowalski finishes his series on From Slavery to Freedom, talking about sins of the desert. If you haven't come, I invite you. He's a very creative thinker. And tomorrow night, of course, Dr. Sokolow continues his series on the evolution of Tanakh. Thursday morning, Malka Simkowitz, the Jews of Ancient Egypt, followed by Shuli Mishkin on archaeology. And this week's Parsha here will be given actually by Noah Notis, who's a student at Princeton. Friday, I'll give, please God, 9 o'clock, my shiur on the Siddur. And then I mentioned earlier, next week we'll have a couple of new classes. We'll send you the information. Menachem Kellner is starting a series on the difference. Menachem Kellner, the expert on the Rambam.
Yes.
The difference between Rabbi Yehuda Levi and the Rambam's approach to human ethics. I don't remember the exact title, but you know, they have different conceptions of our ethical relations with the rest of the world, the non-Jews, etc. Of course, he'll be talking about that. And we actually are starting. It's not, we just finalized a day where, well, the details are not even up on the website yet. We'll be having a 6-part series on Megillat Esther, given by Dr. Aaron Kohler, a professor at YU, who wrote a book a number of years ago on Megillat Esther. That's going to be starting a week today, actually, in the morning. And so we got lots of stuff coming up and going on. And okay, we look forward to learning with you, and invite a friend. That's what we always ask you to do. Just invite a friend to come and join a class. And everybody have a wonderful night, a wonderful week, and we look forward to seeing you. And thank you, Dr. Gewirtz, for the series. Thank you very much. And okay.
You're welcome.
We look forward as we to seeing you at some of our classes as a participant, as you often are. So thank you very much. Okay.
I will. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Lila Tov, everybody.